Hello, everyone. This is Things I Can't Drink About, and I'm your host, Angelique. With me, I have Shan and Sadiqa, as usual. Today, we're kind of going to be talking about a heavy topic, suicide. It is a topic that many people do not want to address or don't know how to begin the conversation, what to say, why people would do it, the thought process behind it. There's so many questions when it comes to suicide. So we're going to at least start the conversation today. If you have anything that you would like to add, please give us a shout out on our website or in the comments on Facebook or Instagram. You just find us at Things I Can't Drink About. So let's start the conversation. Ladies, welcome back to the show. How's everyone doing today?
Doing well for a Thursday.
Speaking for myself, I'm tired as hell. But I'm here.
All right. I have to say I'm actually tired too. So, but we're here though. So we're talking suicide, and I just kind of want to, again, reiterate that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So if it seems like we're doing, like, back-to-back heavy topics, it is intentional. Sorry. but it's for a good reason to get the conversation started and to, you know, give a different perspective and drop some facts or knowledge. To start, kick off this conversation, I will start with Sabita. Have you ever been affected by suicide indirectly or directly?
Okay. So, being an exclusive and being a practicing Buddhist, I've seen cases of it be present. So the answer to that question, yes. There was a young man that practiced Buddhism, you know, within my organization. He, his parents, you know, extremely jovial, you know, very outspoken and energetic parents. However, he was very much so their son, is who I'm speaking about. Very calm nature, very quiet, reserved, more introverted, I would say. And he actually committed suicide at the age of, I believe he was either 16 or 17 at the time, and which is a while ago. But yeah, no one knew anything was wrong, you know, not even his parents. So, you know, very prevalent or close to me in that regard. And also, you know, just working in the public school system, you know, I've worked in the urban setting, teaching mostly Black, Hispanic, and white children. And, you know, I see a lot of attempts of, you know, some people may think of it as being superficial, and not, you know, actually a true attempt. But, you know, any 11, 12, 13-year-old, you know, that's coming to school with, you know, yeah, like lacerations on their wrists and, you know, ankles, any type, you know, I look at it as a real attempt, you know, because one cut is all it takes, you know what I mean, where you can bleed out. You know, and also having a background working in a mental health field, in group homes of that nature, yeah, I've seen it, firsthand.
Shan, what about you?
Let's see. Well, I don't know of anyone close to me that's ever committed suicide. I have heard friends, even family members, speak about attempts. Not to me. I've kind of like heard it hearsay from others saying that some family members opened up to them about being on the brink of committing suicide. My senior year, I think it was my senior, it was either my junior or senior year of high school, had a classmate to commit suicide. And it was a, even though he was not close to everyone in the class, you know, we all were together from like sixth grade up through high school. So it was a hard hit for everyone when he took his life. And he was a really cool guy. And my last experience was when I was in college, either my second semester of my freshman year, which I believe it was, I worked for a suicide hotline. I volunteered. So I would get calls when it was my turn to have the phone, like all times of the night. Sometimes from the same people. They just wanted to call and just talk. And sometimes you'd hang up and that same person would call right back and just needed someone to talk to. They would repeat the same information. So I pretty much, you know, had to listen, had to keep assuring them that everything was going to be okay and hope that me being a listening ear and the advice that I was given was kind of getting through to them. Because I never knew, you know, the outcome unless I got the phone, unless it was my weekend again to get the phone and maybe the same person would call me back. So that was kind of like hope when I would get the same phone call again from someone that I had talked to previously and they still were kind of on the verge of it but had not done it yet. So that has been my experience.
So my personal experience with suicide is when I was 19, I attempted to commit suicide. So, you know, I guess like looking back and being completely honest, like, you know, my mental health issues as far as like depression and things like that, there is not something like new. And I got help for it and I stopped treatment shortly thereafter. So I personally know what it feels like to feel like, you know, why am I doing this or what's the purpose or, just like you just want the way that you feel to stop, the pain to stop, the worry to stop, or, you know, you don't really see the point in moving forward. So yeah, I have like a direct connection with this topic. So with that being said, I guess I'm curious as to, you know, like what your thoughts are in terms of someone actually committing suicide. Do you believe like that is their right? If that's something that they choose to do, there should be no judgment or, you know, like what are your thoughts? Because I know like some people are very religious. Other people are on the other end of the spectrum. So I'm just, I guess, curious to hear your thoughts. Shan, we'll start with you.
I won't say I'm very religious to the point where I'm judging someone or saying, you know, in Christianity, they say when you take your life that it's like you automatically go to hell. There's no way for you to ask for forgiveness. So I won't say that I'm so religious that I'm like, yeah, that's so true. You know, I can't believe this person did that. It kind of is, it's more of a painful feeling, a hurtful feeling to think that someone would do that and to think that there was no, you know, that kind of helped them or talked to them. Because I feel as if before a person commits suicide, for the most part, of course, you can't speak for everyone. There's always exceptions. But like I said, with me working for that suicide hotline, before some of the people would, you know, actually do it, or if they did it, they would call and they would talk to someone. And I just feel like that there are a lot of people, hotline or not, that kind of cry out for help. And sometimes the signs are just not acknowledged or not taken seriously. So my thought is that I'm not judgmental towards the person. I feel very sad because it not only affects the life that's taken, but it affects the lives that are around the person. So that's how I feel about it.
So what are your thoughts?
I have no opinion on if it's right or wrong. I can empathize with a person attempting to do it and actually executing it. So I have no moral judgment as to if I would say that it's right for you to take your life or if it's wrong for you to take your life. The average person deals with so much, and we all have, you know, a tolerance threshold, you know. And then there's such a large population of people that go throughout life without being diagnosed or understanding how to figure out what's going on with them, you know. So
mm-hmm.
When you're talking about suicide, in a sense, you know, I would never sit here and say what you're doing is wrong, regardless of how I'm raised, any principles that, you know, that I believe in and things of that nature. But, yeah, I'm indifferent to it. But I'm just going to simply leave it at I can empathize with and how or understand why a person would attempt and or actually execute, you know, taking their lives.
All right. I think as a person who has been there and felt it and attempted it, be very hypocritical of me to have any opinion in a way. And, you know, when it comes to mental health, like the statistics around suicide and its correlation with mental health is that 90% of the people who commit suicide have a mental illness. You know, something that we've mentioned before. And then that 10% is are people who may have a mental illness and not be diagnosed, as well as those who just made a decision to end their life. No mental illness attached. And then that statistic also doesn't include individuals who choose to end their life through reckless behavior, which is also a form of suicide. So, you know, knowing that it's so intertwined with having a healthy mental state, clearly, my opinion is, there really isn't one. I really would like, you know, I was in D.C. and they were doing a suicide walk while I was there last year. And there were, you know, so many things up and so many people who were there to honor their loved ones with foundations they've started and things like that. And I think that's, you know, wonderful, a great way to remember someone. But I didn't see, like, a lot of tables where there was help for those who have a mental illness. And to me, in my humble opinion, like, in order to prevent suicide in a real way, we really have to address, like, the mental health aspect of it. Because if you're just going to, like, pat my back and tell me everything's going to be okay, which I'm not what they say at all, right? But if you're not going to get to the core of the issue, which is a lot of what I'm feeling is because of something else, right? And that just is adding to greatly to the way that I'm receiving these things that are happening or whatever the case may be. It's almost for naught because you're not really fixing, you know, what's really going on with me. With that being said, there has been a lot of talk about medical assisted suicide or physician assisted suicide. So if you're not familiar with it, what this is a person, so it's not euthanasia where you hear about people that have found some obscure website and said, hey, I want to end my life. I have like a terminal illness, and somebody comes out and like helps them set it up and watches them die. And, you know, it's not that. This is specifically you have a terminal illness. You tell your doctor that you would rather choose when you die. It's also called death by dignity. Your doctor prescribes you something. You can pick it up at the pharmacy, and you're fully aware that if you go through with it, take the pill or whatever the case may be, you are going to pass away. So there's five states, Oregon, Vermont, Washington, California, Montana, which in Montana you have to actually go to court in order to do this. And your doctor can pretty much give you this medication. And recently there's been like a spike in prescriptions and the deaths associated with death by dignity. And so I was curious to hear your thoughts on the subject because it is a form of suicide. And if you feel like it's different than someone who says, hey, I can't take, you know, what's happening in my life anymore. If it's, you know, if you see it any differently, because in these situations, these people have terminal illness, or do you feel like those who see the idea of suicide in such a small lens, like maybe they should look at these situations differently? So, Sadiqa, what do you think?
I mean, to be honest, people are doing everything now under a prescription, you know. So you choosing when you would like to take your life, I mean, it's your life. You're entitled to do with it as you please. I don't see anything wrong with it. And, you know, as a physician, being a physician, I could see, you know, some people scrutinizing the oath and what they took, stating that, you know, they are vowing to care for life and, you know, treat it with, you know, vowing to attempt to save lives. But again, if it's you knowing it, that you would like to, it's your life. So essentially there's no right and wrong in what you want to do with it, you know. I think most people inflict their own moral judgment to determine or deem what is considered right or wrong. But essentially, yeah, I could see it actually becoming more popular in years to come with different legislatures across different states. So because it's a controlled way of ending your life versus you taking it and then someone discovering you, you know, so it's more, you know, people, it's giving people an opportunity to begin their grieving process, you know, outside of the person who's committing suicide. So like your family members. So, but yeah, I don't see anything wrong with it. You're entitled to do with your life what you want to do with it. So.
I have to say that I agree with Sadiqa, and I mean, as she stated, it's your life and it's your decision. Just thinking about, and forgive me because I don't know the young lady's name, but just thinking about the case, I think it was last year, where the young lady had a terminal illness. I think she found out about not too long after getting married, and there was no treatment. There was no coming back from it. It was just going to get worse and worse until she eventually passed away. And so she decided to end her life. And I can't say that she was wrong. I can't say that I really can't say what I would have done in her shoes, but I will say that I'm not going to say she's wrong. And, you know, if you're told that you have a terminal illness and your health is going to continue to decline until you, you know, meet your demise, then why not go ahead and jump in front of it and do it yourself? Because I can't imagine the pain that she was going through. And then just, like, knowing, absolutely knowing that her fate was going to be death anyway, you know. So I totally agree that it's up to the person and it's their decision. And they should not be judged or scrutinized or made to feel less than because they make that choice.
I remember, I think she had a form of brain cancer. I think she found out before she was supposed to get married, and they still got married, and she made the decision. She wrote a letter that went, like, viral on the internet, and of course people judged her, but her husband, her family completely supported her decision. And I think, you know, I think that these are two very different things. Like being, you know, not mentally healthy and deciding to end your life and knowing that death is going to meet you at the corner and you are walking to the corner. I think it's selfish for you to want someone to suffer knowing that they're going to suffer and they would like to decide, like, where their timeout moment is. I think it gives everybody an opportunity to prepare and, you know, give that person, I guess, their dignity and not, you know, end up in whatever capacity, you know, they may be in at the end and not just be in excruciating pain that any form of medicine is not going to relieve them of. I think that is very different than wanting to know what the warning signs are and wanting to reach out and help someone and prevent them from making a permanent decision on a temporary situation. And that is such a cliche, but it's really what it is. And I think they're very, very different things. You know, to someone in that situation, I would have a very different conversation than to someone that was me when I was 19, you know. Because, you know, you can say a whole bunch of cliches, but the reality is that the impact that your death has should be one of the things that makes you realize that maybe you are worth being here. There are people that are going to love and miss you and care for you. And I know in my situation now, I have a child, and I don't want her to grow up without me in any way. So, you know, finding something to look for is important. So I think, you know, I don't think people realize how relevant and large suicide is as a whole in the world and in the United States and in the communities that we live in. So I pulled some statistics. And so the general number is around 800,000 people commit suicide in the world per year. But in the United States, there are about 94 suicides a day, which comes out to be about 34,598 a year. And there's a lot of suicides. That's more than homicides. I think in 2014, there were only 18,000 homicides in the United States. So 18,000 homicides in comparison to 34,000 suicides. This should be something that we talk about a lot more, in my opinion. We talk about homicide. We talk about all the time that, you know, someone murdered their wife or their family member or the girl they met at the bar. But what we don't hear about is someone's son was lost because he was crying for help and they missed the warning signs. And now they want to, you know, help other families who are impacted. You don't hear that story nearly as often or played out like you do other things. It's the leading cause of death, the 11th leading cause of death across any age bracket. And for every suicide, there's 25 suicide attempts. So, Shane, I'm hearing all of that. I would like to, I guess, gather your initial thoughts.
That's a lot. Those numbers are very large. It's very disturbing because out of the 34,000, it's like how many days warning signs? How many tried to reach out to someone for help that was ignored? I've never been on the verge of suicide, but just thinking about just going back to my childhood and just thinking about when I was bullied in school and I had someone to go home and talk to after being bullied in middle school, sixth grade. It got a little better, seventh grade, and eventually it stopped, but sixth grade was really, really bad. And I just think about now how children are bullied, be it face-to-face in school or cyberbullying, and they take their lives. And I'm just wondering, like, if they tried to talk to anyone. I could talk to my grandmother, but I can remember not being able to talk to my mom. She had whatever she had going on, other things that were more important than hearing about my day, than allowing me to get things off my chest about what happened at school. That was the last thing she wanted to hear. So sometimes I had to keep that box up, you know. And I'm just wondering how many of that 34,000 actually reached out to someone or someone paid attention to change behavior, or, you know, if they were depressed, if anyone even cared to listen or pay attention to the signs that may have been there. So those numbers are very disturbing, to say the least.
I just want to chime in. Like, I'm pretty sure they all showed signs. It's just a matter of if they were verbal signs or nonverbal. And the average person don't know how to, you know, dissect issues or concerns. You know what I mean? So, yeah, like just going, like I said, going back to just recalling, like within the last 2 years of me teaching, I vividly remember 4 or 5 cases of young girls and boys that actually came to me for, you know, help. I was a chosen voice for them and who they could express themselves to and were willing to open themselves up to. But I also, and it wasn't a thing where they were, you know, upfront about it. You know, I've always been the type of person that could, I like to pay attention to people often. I'm really not that verbal, and I really feel like my nonverbal communication skills are greater than my verbal. So when in a room of trying to assess things and paying attention to certain situations, I noticed, you know, behavior. And, but, you know, just, but yeah, I'm just saying all this to say that people do cry out, and they cry out in different ways. And, but yeah, I don't think as a society in America, right, we got so much going on. Everything is just like, I got to get all of this stuff done in a day or a minute or a second. So when that person is seeking help, you don't even know that it's a cry for help because you have so much of your own concern going on, you know. But I'm pretty, yeah, 34,000, they did say something. you may not have known how to dissect it or interpret it, but a warning sign was given. But again, it takes a skillful person and a person who is willing to heed what type of sign is being given. Because most communication is not even verbal, you know. We exude so much more nonverbal communication skills than verbal, but, you know, a lot of people don't even know that. But, yeah, it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
But it's not really astonishing, though. I could see how, you know, that number, and it's probably even greater than that. Those are the reported cases, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, because, you know, even contemplating it, I think the average American has thought about it, whether it be self-directed or, you know, but again, like, but living like again, living in America, you know, it's very much so a taboo topic because we, you know, this land of opportunity, right? So there should be no concern of people taking their lives, especially youth, you know. And I'm talking about the ages between ages of 11 up to 35. You know, there are a lot of people walking around that are truly, and I'm, for lack of a better term, I'm going to say unstable. So it's a bit much going on, you know, in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We don't live as simplistic as we used to. And, again, everything is so heightened in this time. So and we tend to, as a society, I see us more so bottling and becoming more introverted as far as we're not really dealing with certain situations, what's going on with yourself. So, but, yeah.
You know, I've sat in, like, so we kind of had a general conversation in, like, my sociology class about suicide, and it was really amazing to me to see, like, how many people, like, fall back on their religious views. And I have no problem with any religion or you being religious and being, you know, dedicated to whatever it is that you are in terms of your religion. What I have an issue with is when you pick and choose what you want to judge people off of. And that's what I have an issue with. So if you're not going to, like, shame the mother who has like myself, who's a single parent and was never married, like, I don't think you should shame anyone else. But, you know, it was eye-opening, and, you know, I have a great professor. He made some valid points that really kind of drove home, like, maybe you're thinking about this wrong and you're being very selfish in your thinking, and it's bigger than your small point of view. You know, I haven't sat in a room with people who attempted suicide, my sonhood included, who have been there at one point. And in, you know, group settings and just being able to openly talk about it. Like, this is what I was feeling. This is what I was going through. This is how I felt. This is, you know, the number one thing, like, the recurring theme that I've heard, you know, this isn't facts. I don't know if you're going to be able to pull this up somewhere, is you feel alone. You feel that you are either alone and you don't have anyone, or that those around you do not hear you, and you might as well be by yourself. So you're not really connected to anyone or anything in a way that stabilizes you, and or you feel so overwhelmed and you've been crying for help that at this point you feel like you're drowning in mess. And so why am I even trying? Like, that's like the banner. Like, if you had a box, like, which one of these did you feel, this or other, more than likely people are going to check the first or the second box.
Yeah. So you're saying these are the two most commonalities that you saw to reoccur.
Right. I felt by myself.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to miss me? Nobody seems to want me here. As a person who feels, as a person without much of a support system, I can completely get how you start to feel like, who really is going to miss me? Because I'm here. I don't see my phone ringing. I don't see anybody, like, coming to check up on me or see about me or even care. If, you know, if I miss a day at work, nobody's going to call me and say, hey, is everything okay? They're going to assume I must have told the manager and move on with their lives. No one's going to, you know, I'm like very minuscule in the impact that I've made in other people's lives. Like nobody, I don't matter. It's a real feeling. I have felt it a lot. And so when, like, other thoughts start to creep in, that feeling of loneliness or of a lack of impact, like, I don't really know how to describe it, it just manifests into, like, a whole new idea, and then it just keeps going, and your brain just keeps feeding into this until it becomes, like, you know, it's okay for me to go, why am I here? I should just kill myself. No one's going to miss me anyway. You know, a whole list of varying statements depending on, you know, where you are. And it's really easy. And the fact is that, no, people, there are people who probably, people, you know, their family members are analyzing week over week and month over month of the past, however many, before they kill themselves, and they say, I don't know what I missed. And there are people who sometimes it's going to, you know, maybe you didn't miss anything. Maybe they were very secretive and held their feelings inside and just decided, hey, I can't do it anymore. But for the most part, most people, you know, have shown sometimes, you know, their personality has changed. You know, they become withdrawn. They become angry a lot. They start drinking more or doing drugs or they just, you know, it's more apparent. And unfortunately, when you're in the middle of feeling like no one gives a damn anyway, and you start not acting like yourself, and no one shows that they really give a damn outside of, hey, what's going on with you? You good? Okay, you good? All right, cool. And they move on with their life. It's like validation to all of these irrational thoughts that you have. And unfortunately, it's just that, an irrational thought or thoughts. And as easy as it may seem to be, like, to stand on a rooftop and say, hey, I need help, I'm feeling off, it's not as easy. It's not that simple, because you want help, but the irrationality of it is you've already you know, like, you've already thought this through.
Rationale.
So, yeah, that's the word I'm looking for.
Your rationale.
It's off.
Because you've mapped out the steps to execute it. And so even though you're seeking validation, right? I'm going to say that. To say, hey, and it's interesting that you said that, you know, those are the two commonalities of reoccurring, you know, statements of what, you know, people that have attempted suicide or people that did, you know, execute it, they said those are, you know, prevalent comments that were made. I wonder if, like, even through support, right, do you still have a desire to, you know, execute it, right? Because the young guy I was telling you guys about, like, when I said his parents were involved, right, and siblings involved, he had a huge social circle, but there was still something missing, right? And he still took his life. So, I mean, the dialogue piece, the checking in, I mean, piece was there. This is me looking in on it, you know, but I'm just wondering if, how, I would like to compare the data. Go ahead.
I don't want to interrupt you, but it makes me think of two things. Like, the first one being, like, what's he really talking?
Right, that's what I'm saying. I would like to see the data, what is considered, when you say, like, okay, the commonality of the statement, I feel alone, right? What is your definition of feeling alone? Because...
And that's the thing, like, that is so
like,
subjective.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. How does that look to you?
I will
Didn't
be
that
honest,
make you feel that void of, yeah.
It's very different from everyone. I've had, like,
yeah.
I mean, and again, I'm just speaking from conversations that I've been privy to from being in a group setting, and it's a very much a safe place for you to be like, look, today, like, I was going to jump, like, crash my car, and that's how I felt today. You know what I mean? I didn't do it, but I'm not going to lie. The feeling was there, and no one's going to be like, what?
Yeah.
She's trying to, like, you know, it's such a safe place. You know, that feeling of loneliness, like when people are describing, I feel lonely, you know, and they start describing, like, why they feel that way. It is literally from one end to the other, from I literally feel like I have no one and nothing. I go home by myself every day. My phone does not ring. My social media pages do not buzz. I am by myself. To I have a house and a family and a husband or a wife or whatever the case may be, and I still feel like I am by myself. Like, it is the whole gamut of, you know, because loneliness is such an internal feeling. And
right.
The other thing that it makes me think of is, like, there's this whole mental health piece that no matter how much you dialogue, no matter how much you whatever, and I'll give you an example. So, like, last year when I had my whole breakdown, I was completely and utterly, I felt like I was going to lose all my marbles. I was going to cuss, but I'm not going to cuss. And I was by myself in every sense of the word. I had a boyfriend. I have my daughter. I have a job. You know, I could have went out. I could have done things. But that's not what I felt. Because what was happening with my emotions and what was happening in my head did not equate to the outside world. And while he was there to, and, you know, what's going on with you? Something's not right. You don't seem like yourself. You know, what can I do? What do you need? Do you want me to fill in the blank, right? And he's doing everything that he's supposed to do. He's not ignoring that I've changed. He's having the conversations. He's pressing the issue. He's letting me know that he's there. He's continuously trying to validate, like, you know, I don't know why you feel this way. I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm here. The baby's here. Da, 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 da. All the things they tell you to do. But what was happening with me and in my head, you could have brought President Barack Obama or Prince back to life, and I still would have been like, I ain't got nothing to live for. Like, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what's going on with me. I don't know how to stop this. Because my solution was more...
Do you think it's a... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, my solution was I actually needed to go someplace and get some medicinal help to start putting me back in a place where I could start feeling like Angelique again, so I could pull myself out of that thought process. I was way too far gone for any type of logic to kick in. And my daughter was literally the grounding for, like, you can't just be out here trying to kill yourself today. Okay? Thanks. Like, that was it. And if you don't have that, like, feeling how I felt, you could have had the best support system in the world. It was not going to make a difference if certain things on the mental health spectrum were not in place, if that makes any sense. And I'm only speaking from my experience. If anybody else has a different experience, love to hear it.
So I have a question. Just speaking from your experience and you stating that, you know, you realized that you needed help far beyond and what a support system or what anyone else could give you. So did you, like, look into if there were, like, groups or any type of help where you can go and talk to someone before, like, going to a doctor and getting medical help?
No, because when we initially started having the conversations that I was different, it pushed me to talk to a psychologist, okay? And then after talking to the psychologist for about 2 months, she started to go, you know, I was on antidepressants, and that wasn't changing a damn thing. I mean, we were going through them like hotcakes, and we were, you know, let's try this one. Okay, we're going to up the dosage. Okay, this is the max. Let's try that. It ain't working. Okay, let's go to this one. We're going to up the dosage, and this is the max. Okay, that's not working. What else have you taken? Okay, we're not going to do that. Let's try this one. And none of them were working. And that is an indication that maybe you're not depressed. Maybe there's something else going on, right? So then she's like, huh. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I need you to make an appointment with a psychiatrist because they prescribe medication. They can give you a clearer diagnosis, which told me, without her being legally able, I'm assuming, to tell me that I'm probably not depressed and there's something else wrong with me. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
However, part of the problem is trying to find a psychiatrist in I can't speak for anywhere else, but in Richmond, Virginia area, it's nearly impossible last minute. We're talking about waiting lists. It's going to be a minute. You know, if you're not literally losing your shit right then at that moment, homicidal or suicidal, you're pretty much not going to get any help. I could have walked in the hospital and been like, I know I need help, but because I am not completely out of it, I'm not completely suicidal, like I'm not going to attempt to actually take my life, but I'm thinking about it. And I'm not going to kill anyone, they're not going to help me. They're going to say, go see a psychiatrist who's going to tell me I can't get you in until, what's this, June? We looking at September.
Right.
So I had a whole breakdown just from not getting any help, and that pushed me into a place where I could get the help. Now, there are groups like the National Alliance of Mental Illness, for example, has groups in local areas. I know there's a Central Virginia one. There's locations. You can look it up. It's NAMI.com, NAMI. And there's group settings. You can go with other people who have a mental illness or who want to know more or just want to support. There's groups in the area, but that's not the place that you're mentally in at that point. There aren't many people, unless you have been here and you have done it and you know, like, I know how I'm feeling is going to lead to this dark place, so let me, like, cut it off at the head before it gets the whole body. More than once you get to that place, you're not proactively serious, like, you know, you're typically not proactively reaching out. You feel like it's too late and it's too fucked up for you to get the help. For lack of a better way to put it, like you're too far gone, you're lost in the soul, and it's a horrible feeling. And I don't wish it on anyone. And I wish everybody got help. And that's why it's important for people to not pitter patter around it. Like, you know, if you feel like killing yourself today, and somebody hits you with a pause, or you know they're not in their right self, and they're like, no, I would never do that. Well, here's the thing. We're going to go to some meetings and just get around some people. Let's talk it out. Because, you know, some people are, if you know that that person has been there and done that, and they're showing you signs and symptoms and indications that something's not right, it's important for the support group to push them into help. This isn't like addiction where they really have to, like, want to get the help. It's really the support group that has to push somebody into help, because once they get on their medication or get in the right group or whatever it is that that person needs, they'll come around. But if you're just going to say, like, I'm just going to love them back to, like, a mentally healthy place, like, it's not going to happen. Like, you can't love me back to a mentally healthy place. You can love me and help me in other ways, but you can't love me alone, and that's it, if that makes any sense.
It does. It sounds like it sounds like suicide is a topic that needs to be more discussed. And there needs to be more of an acceptance that this is a reality for a lot of people. Clearly, the statistics say that. And just listening to the process that you went through, was trying to link with a psychiatrist, and in my field of work, without trying to divulge too much, because I'm not trying to breach any HIPAA here, but I feel as if the system here in Virginia, and I can only speak for this state that I work in, is not really set up to help. It's not like immediate help that you can get. When you spoke about having to, like, either be, like, in the moment of trying to harm yourself or harm someone else, and that's when they'll jump into action, I can vouch for that. Because I know there are some clients where clearly the help is needed. Clearly they need something, like, instantaneously, but it's not offered to them. If they're not about to hurt somebody, that's, you know, and the surroundings, again, I'm trying to talk very, very broad without being specific, but just where I work, if no one's in imminent danger, then there's nothing that can be done. And you see this person before your eyes deteriorating and, like, needing someone to help them right away. And it's not, the help is not.
Oh, yeah. I literally got carted from work, crying, hysterical. I'm sure I was not making sense for the most part. I remember apologizing a lot because, like, somewhere in my subconscious, I think I was embarrassed because I'm at work, like, having a breakdown, couldn't process my thoughts. I don't really remember much of it at all. And instead of, they took, you know, they called the ambulance because I clearly was in no state to drive, and they took me to the hospital. And the hospital gave me something to calm me down. They told me to talk to my primary care physician, and I was free to go. That was it. Go home. Figure it out. And I clearly needed help.
Right.
Like, from the moment that, you know, the whole situation started to the moment that I ended up in the hospital, like, zoned in a whole new, like, I felt zoned out, intense, and scared. It was like an hour and a half. Clearly, nothing was going to change. And they just sent me home. Go home. Talk to your PCP and figure it out. And that's a problem. Because there are a whole lot of me's and worse. And they're just going to send you home. And I know part of it is capacity and all of that. And that's cool. But, like, where does it happen? But I want to roll into, like, the next piece. And I don't know if I should read the statistics or ask the question. So I'm going to ask the first question. Do you feel like suicide is a Black issue? And one of the reasons I ask this is that by wide and by far, there are the statistics show that in America, African Americans commit suicide less than anyone else. That's the general statistic. So we're looking at, like, a rate of 15.1 whites and 12.6 Native Americans in comparison to, like, 5.1 Black people. Mm-hmm. They didn't specify where these points and ones came from. I'm going to assume out of 100 or 1,000. Do you feel like, Sadiqa, this is, like, a Black person's issue?
No. Suicide is colorblind. Again, like I said, given my history and me working with, you know, a huge range, Black, white, male, female, individuals that are in preteen, teenagers, young professionals, you know, in their 20s and 30s or whatever, even some residents in their 40s, right? Of course, it is colorblind. So, and I think that's another reason why it's not talked about as much, because you can't, it's not gender, it's not, you know, specific to one race. So
there's no headline for it.
Right. So it's like, oh, they're definitely really not going to pay attention to detail or at least, you know, dialogue about it because you're not targeting a specific group of people. And again, it's America. So apparently we don't have nothing wrong in this country, you know, just being, but yeah, I think all walks of life, no individual life is different from some, you know, I mean, our lives are different, but to say that it's specific to one, race is, I would never agree with that.
But do you feel like this is even something, I guess what I was really asking is, do you feel like this is something that Black people really, really, really should be paying attention to if the blanket statistic says that it's not nearly as prevalent in our community as other things? Do you feel like other issues this is not something that should be like a high priority?
Oh, I don't agree with that statistic. I think it is prevalent in our community. I just don't think we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feel like in our community, we have a huge religious background. And so,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not going to say it's based on being a Christian or a Muslim, a Buddhist, or whatever you practice, right? I just feel like most of the time in our community, we will say, give it to God, you know what I mean? Or like,
pray about
your
it.
Spiritual guidance. Yeah, your spiritual guidance help cure that situation or whatever, you know? And I mean, I hope no one, I'm offending anybody by saying that, but we often tend to take our concerns and problems to the altar, for lack of a better term. Rather than actually seeking assistance
mm-hmm.
from psychologists or psychiatrists. And I think a lot of it has to do with because most of your psychologists and psychiatrists don't look like us. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's a conversation I just had with my therapist. Go ahead.
So when you recognize there's something going on with you, it's like, okay, who can I really talk to about this? Who can understand me? And to be as superficial as it may sound, if a person is going through something, they're 9 times out of 10, they're not going to reach out to a person that don't even have the same, you know, complexion as them. So, especially, you know, when you're talking about younger people,
mm-hmm.
perception and how you appear to look weighs a lot. Even though people say, oh, that should not matter, it doesn't matter, nah, that's a bunch of bull. How you look and how you come across to people determines if a person is willing to open up to you, you know. I really truly do feel like it is prevalent in our community, but we don't talk about it. I think it's just like, oh, girl, you'll be all right, you know. It's swept underneath the rug. And then
mm-hmm.
on top of that, I think it's also a cultural norm to say, oh, well, we Black, we're going to go through some stuff, you know. It's very taboo.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, this subject matter is colorblind. There are people miserable and unhappy of all walks of life. And it's extremely prevalent, like I said, in our youth. However, us being American and how we are portrayed across the nation and the world, they're not going to speak up about it and say that, hey, this is a real concern, this is a real issue. So,
mm-hmm.
Because it's not specific to one group of people. So, yeah.
Okay, so a few piggybacks. Because you have described some of the things that I was thinking. So the first thing I feel as if before you read the statistics and you asked the question of, you know, like, is this a black thing? Is it prevalent? Do we think this is something that we should be concerned about? I want to say that I agree with the statistics. I agree that it is not as great in our community as others, but at the same time, I feel like it is a growing epidemic, and that before long, if we don't tap into accepting mental illness, if we don't tap into going to see a psychiatrist or going to see a psychologist or seeking medical attention, that is going to grow increasingly fast, and we're going to catch up to other groups. Because as Sadiqa stated, it's a lot of things, suicide included, we sweep under the rug. This is a white person's thing.
Issue.
You would never see a black person, right? You'd never see a black person killing themselves. That's bull. That's not true. We need to own it, and we need to seek the help. I want to speak to the religious piece. I think, and by no means, I'm no preacher, I'm no minister. I could probably only give you about 2 or 3 Bible verses. I believe in that our higher being is God. That's just what I believe. But at the same time, to just tell someone to pray about something, it's not adequate. It's not sufficient. It's not enough. My opinion is, yes, to pray, but at the same time, you need actions behind that prayer. And these people are put in place, the psychiatrists, the psychologists, the doctors, the medical professionals, they're put in place for a reason. This medicine is put in place for a reason. The guidance from counselors and whomever you need to seek, they're there for a reason. And I feel like, as a community, that's not something that we own and we accept, and we really need to. We need to shift our culture. We need to start owning that we have mental health issues. We need to start owning that, you know, our people are taking their lives for one reason or another, be it mental illness or for another reason. It's real. It's a reality. And we just need to accept it. So that's how I feel about it.
I completely agree. So I'm just going to give you some general statistics that supports your thoughts. So the suicide rate growth in black children, according to the CDC, saw an increase in the past few years. And that went from 1.78 incidences of suicide in black children to 3.47, and that was in, like, less than a 10-year period. From 1999 to 2004, young African-American males had the highest rate of suicide out of everyone. So even though, it's kind of like you give us statistics, but they're really not right. For ages 15 to 24.4, suicide is the third leading cause of death. And people that commit suicide actually do it a full decade earlier if they are black in comparison to white counterparts. So the average age of suicide in African Americans is 32 and compared to 44.6. So we are not only a growing, massively growing demographic, especially in our youth, with committing suicide, but we are doing it a hell of a lot sooner than our white counterparts. And I do apologize, everyone. That is my daughter watching a video.
And it's like I totally agree with those statistics. Like you said, I mean, they don't give you like 100% truth or full truth or the full picture. But they're there to lay out some type of picture, some type of foundation for you to follow. And it's just like it's serious. And for another thought that I forgot to add was black people are supposed to represent strength. We're strong. Like, we can handle whatever comes at us. So how can we be suicidal? You know, and that's like a rhetorical question, because that's how I feel, as if we look at it.
Like, portrayed in it, like
people that,
right. Well, it's not so more so of us being viewed as being strong. I think we're portrayed as being tolerable, right? And having the ability to endure. So, because, you know, just given how we are portrayed across in school systems, right, through history and even everyday life, being able to tolerate something doesn't mean that you are strong. You know what I'm saying? It's just it's more so a level of endurance, of being able to just be subjected to a lot of stuff. So, but yeah, I just wanted to, but yeah, and that's how society views us.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much so stereotypical. So, but yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I didn't mean to interrupt, but go ahead.
Oh, no,
Shan.
You're fine. No, you're fine. That was all. That was just, I just had that thought and I forgot to add it. So I just want to plug that in, but that was it.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah, I mean, this is a major, you know, like I said, just I know it's extremely prevalent, and you know, me working in a secondary education level, has, you know, so many children, 11, 12, 13 years of age, that have attempted. You know, like, you look at their arms and their wrists, or, you know, they're wearing long sleeve shirts in June, and their demeanor is just completely different, and you just so happen to inquire about how everything is going, and then they tell you, you know.
Break down,
and they don't tell
just
everyone.
Let it all out.
Yeah, they do. All because, you know, you put forth the effort to make a connection with them, and then you see that, you know, they've cut themselves, and and it, you know, they're fresh wounds. They're not old. You can see the old ones underneath the new ones and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's really real. Mm-hmm. You know, children are popping pills. They're experimenting with different drugs, and how, you know, they are under a lot is going on. I'm gonna say that.
Mm-hmm.
And
so I'm curious to ask about you being a former teacher. And I really don't know anything about teaching, about the school system. So I know that with my line of work, we have crisis prevention training. Do you all have some sort of training where you can, or I know for some people it's just instinct. Like, for you, nonverbal, you can, you know, pick up on it. You notice things. You're a very observant person. So I know that's just your nature. But is there some type of training, and not to put so much on teachers as if you all don't already have a lot going on.
Right.
But is there some type of training for you to, like, pick up on cues and different things? To be honest,
the school districts that I've worked in, no. All of my training I've gotten has been outside of, you know, outside of the school. And I've, for example, okay, it was one incident, two years ago. Had a young lady, went from being extremely jovial, like, you know, bright, full of life, to very glimmery and dark. And so I was like, this, you know, something's going on. There's a disconnect. And come to find out, she had attempted, you know. And so I then passed it along to the school social worker, right? Asked me what they did about the situation. Nothing.
Not
it's a rhetorical
nothing.
Question. right? So when you're saying, when you're asking, are there resources? No, you're there's barely enough money in the budget to keep schools fully staffed. So, you know, like I said, I'm not the type to sit here and say, oh, being a school teacher is great. It has, you know, that's not what it is, you know, for me. I ain't going to never sit here and lie and tell you that it's this wonderful environment. No, kids are very much so unhappy. And I see it firsthand, you know what I'm saying? I've seen it firsthand on several occasions, year after year. And so, I mean, in the average teacher, because the school's overpopulated, you're in a and it's not just one student that's going through this type of situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out, sometimes it's a triggered behavior. And if you see one that's becoming a superficial cutter, then there's a trigger, and then her friend is doing it, and then another friend is doing it, and then her boyfriend is doing it. So it's like, and it's across the board. But, yeah, to answer your question, no. There's no crisis wave. There is no intervention piece that actually is implemented. It may be stated that there is one, but and someone on a secondary level, no, Shan, there is not. They barely got money to keep a choir teacher in some schools, you know what I'm saying, or a band teacher, mm-hmm. for that matter. So when you're talking about bringing in actual therapists to assist and ensure that the mental state of these kids are well, even the guidance counselors are overwhelmed. The guidance counselors can't even intervene on that level because they're worrying about having to do schedule changes, like, you know what I'm saying, because, of, again,
right.
the population of the schools. So it becomes a thing of I can't even counsel because I got to do logistical work to ensure that
mm-hmm.
records are right. So, yeah, it's a void, a major void. And then what they do, the districts, they like, for example, you know, bullying is a huge topic right now, right? Very extremely trendable across the board. And you have a lot of these graduate pilot programs that are getting grant money to come into, you know, lower poverty schools to see if their program works, right? So they come in and they do all this demographic tracking. They get the kids to take all these surveys, and then they pay the teachers a certain stipend to give their input on surveys too, and they collect all this data. And then they say, hey, your kid basically just falls in a group, and they label them. And then they use their master's and their doctorate research. They gather it from the data that they've collected to determine if these kids may become pre-suicidal, suicidal. And it's, to be honest, it's really fucked up, you know what I'm saying? So, but yeah. It's messed up. But going back to answering your question, no. The average school system does not have an actual crisis intervention piece implemented in the school. So.
That's definitely needed.
It's sad.
I feel like we would be amiss to not include some of the behaviors that you should look out for and provide everyone with some numbers to call in case you or someone you know is suicidal, maybe suicidal, or you just want the resources. So I'm just going to like run through an extremely short list of potential behaviors. So you want to be aware, and some of these are kind of like, oh, okay, that's really not difficult to figure out, but clearly if they're on a list, like, someone needed to hear it.
What's obvious is not obvious.
Right, right. Some of the specific things to look out for include someone increasing their use of drugs or alcohol, being more aggressive, looking for a way to kill themselves, such as searching online for materials or some type of means, acting recklessly, withdrawing from activities, isolating from friends and families, sleeping too much or sleeping too little, visiting or calling people to say goodbye, and giving away any of their prized possessions. Some of the things that a person talks about that may be suicidal is killing themselves, having no reason to live, experiencing unbearable pain, feeling trapped, or being a burden to others. And some people who consider suicide display one of the more the following moods, which is depression, a loss of interest, rage, irritability, humiliation, and anxiety. And again, this is not like a, if somebody happens to, you know, have given you their prize baseball, that doesn't mean that they probably want to kill themselves, but you want to look at like the whole picture. The whole picture and say, like, are they exhibiting like two or three of these behaviors? And I probably need to have a conversation with them. And I want to state that if you have
I was about to say that's pretty much everybody in America, but it's not, but it's not even about, yeah, but to be more clearly, I would say it's a recurring behavioral act of two or three of what you listed. You know what I'm saying? It's very prevalent and it's very noticeable.
Well, sometimes it's very abrupt. Like people just make a plan and they just start going through their list. But, you know, it's not just one
you
thing you want to look at as a whole.
I'm like, girl, that's me. No, I'm joking.
I want to say this, though. If you are going to approach someone with, you know, about your suicidal thoughts, let me say these two things. Number one, if you have strong about their suicidal thoughts, if you're going to approach someone, if you have strong views about suicide, if you are overtly religious, if you don't feel like, if you feel like throwing them a bunch of cliches, hey, you know, man, it's going to be all right, you're going to be all right, and that's like the extent of your emotional capacity, whatever it is that may get in the way of you actually emotionally reaching somebody, I suggest that you actually have a conversation with someone to reach out to them for you. Because if you're not emotionally available, if you are going to, like, make them feel bad for answering, like, yeah, I have been thinking about it, you are not the person that should be reaching out to them, and you need to find help for them through other means or through someone else. And I had another point. If you're going to approach them, if you're going to approach them, be prepared for them to say yes. And by being prepared, having resources available to them, don't just be like, hey, man, you think about killing yourself, and someone's like, oh, I don't know how to answer that. What does that mean? That means you were thinking about it? Yeah, I guess, kind of. And then you like, oh, that's it. You shouldn't do that, man. We love you. Like, if that's going to be your conversation, like, you're clearly not prepared to have that conversation. You should really do some research, or again, find someone that would be willing to have that conversation. And that may be me reaching out to some of these places that I'm going to give you, either getting some talking points or getting someone in the community to come and help you have that conversation with them in case they say yes, like, hey, I have a number and I'm going to call this person so that we can talk this through, whatever it is. So if you, some of the numbers, so there's National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. I am sure that you've seen this number all over social media. It is 800-273-TALK, and spelled out, that's 800-273-8255. There's also a crisis text line if you do not feel like actually talking to someone and you like the anonymity of texting. You can text HOME to 741-741. That was HOME to 741-741. If you really feel like you're about to kill yourself, you can call 911. If you feel like you are getting to a place and you don't feel comfortable talking to a loved one, talking to some anonymous person, go to your doctor. I promise you they you are not going to be the first person, and they would be more than happy to have you sitting in their office saying, I need help. I'm really, really seriously considering kill myself. If you don't get me help, I'm probably going to kill myself. And I can assure you they have resources in a place that they can get you to so that you can get the help that you need. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah. I also want to say if you are like a public service worker and you know you're working with younger people, try to stay, abreast and in tune with what they display. We already know that kids are not the best verbal communicators, but they will show you a lot through the nonverbal skills. So pay attention to that. And then if there are any, young people listening, find a teacher that you do know that, you trust. And don't be afraid to, talk to someone that, and it doesn't have to be a teacher. It could be a security officer that works in your school. It could be the attendance lady. You know what I mean? Reach out to someone that, that is going to be able to support you. And don't be afraid to dialogue about what you're going through. So that was my little 2 cents.
All right, Shane, you got any final thoughts?
Yeah, just piggyback off of what you both said, to really use the resources, look up the resources, the numbers, the doctors, Google, talk to peers, support groups, and to take, for our community as a whole, just to take suicide seriously and to really own and accept that it's something real and something that we really need to deal with. And I always say this, it is cliche, but I'm a firm believer that we seriously need to get back to dinner table discussions with our families. And we need to have open dialogue about any and everything. We need to, as parents, to know our children. And knowing our children is not just from verbal dialogue, but noticing changes in behaviors, changes in attitudes, just any little thing. We need to be able to pick up on those changes and to tune into the child and to ask those necessary questions, and it may not help every situation, but I think that it will help some of the situations. So that's my tip.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up. I want to encourage everyone to have a conversation with someone that you know about their thoughts and opinions and dialogue, and hopefully they'll talk to someone else and keep the conversation going, and it might reach the right person and have an honest moment and someone can get some help. If we want to hear your perspective, so please let us know on Facebook, iTunes, wherever you listen, what your thoughts are on this topic, and let us know if you've been impacted, and if you've ever been suicidal, what it's one thing that kept you, that keeps you grounded, and maybe even one thing that can help someone else. So thank you for joining. We appreciate you, and we'll see you back actually next week since we missed last week's episode. So see you in a week.